This episode is brought to you by Podomatic, the easiest way for podcast fans to become podcasters. Go to podomatic.com or search Podomatic in your app store to start your own podcast for free and find your audience. Hello and welcome to episode number 354 of the Super Horror Bros podcast. I'm your host Matt, and joining me as always is my brother Mike.
Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty good, pretty good.
We are back after our fun little jaunt of covering Black Mirror over the last few weeks, which was such a delight.
Such a joy.
Yeah, to sort of take a step back and away from the horror film world and see one of our favorite TV shows' glorious return. And it was so glorious. Like, I'm still thinking about it. I already can't wait to rewatch certain episodes.
Yeah, sure. I want to watch some of the older stuff as well.
Yeah, I only watched about three prior to my rewatch. Yeah, I didn't watch too many though, so I would like to go back and, because, like, yeah, stuff like Shut Up and Dance I've not seen in ages, and Playtest and Nosedive. There's so many that I would love to see. But yeah, I'll definitely get to them. And yeah, there's a lot of TV to discuss anyway in the future. But we're away from TV this week. We're back in our bread and butter, as it were, back in the new horror world, a horror world that is unbelievably quiet right now.
Across all fronts. World, like, you know, come on, horror.
It's
bizarre. Are we that scared of Insidious? Come on.
Are we that scared of just everything? I mean, in general, the box office is really on its ass right now, and we've seen multiple big movies, come and flop. I think the Indiana Jones movie is not doing great, but I know that that new Pixar movie absolutely bombed. And it's crazy to see these kind of, like, you know, back, you would never expect most Disney films, let alone a Pixar movie, to not do well. There's just been a few other ones that really haven't. So I think it's interesting. Coming in July, there is big heavy hitters with obviously Mission Impossible and Oppenheimer and even Barbie. So, like, there's big films coming. And I hope it wakes up the box office, because, we need films to do well, as we're always saying. But it's been a quiet year, obviously, not just for film, but especially for horror. We've barely had anything to cover for a while, and then even looking at the news, there's just nothing to talk about.
We started off strong, like, this year, but it just seemed to dried up massively. Like, I think, like, January and February was pretty consistent, you know, and we were hitting the cinema and, you know, had a lot to talk about, and, yeah, it's just been very quiet.
It absolutely was, and that was why we didn't get a chance to, you know, dedicate a specific show to The Last of Us, because there was so much to talk about around that time. But yeah, since then, you know, in the last, I'd say, month or two, it's just been so quiet. And yeah, there's a couple of upcoming, and hopefully as we get into the, you know, latter half of the year, getting towards Halloween season, hopefully it'll pick up, because last year, you know, the Halloween season was crazy. So hopefully it's like that. But yeah, as far as the news goes, again, it's extremely quiet. There's only one news item this week. And it's one I just put in here because I know you will be very excited to hear this. And one that is definitely of a relief to me as someone who is about to commit to this at some point, which is that the TV show From has been renewed for a third season.
I'm just happy you're putting From in the news. Like, you know, it feels like you're accepting it into your life, which is an important step to make.
I have been for a while. Like I say, I'm never been more convinced. Like, I will absolutely watch it. It's just a matter of when, not if. And I'm sure that when will be probably quite soon, because there just isn't much to watch. This is a massive relief. It's my biggest fear about TV in general, and committing to a show that has a obviously singular narrative that's told over multiple seasons, like this show is. But even more so when it's a random ass sci-fi show, which I gauge no sense of how many people are actually watching it, and it's on a channel that is I'd never even heard of prior to the show existing. You know, that's ticking all the boxes of
it's
get
also,
ready to be disappointed.
You know, as someone that's seen it, like, you know, it's ambitious and it's out there, and it's not just, like, going to give you this conventional story where, like, yeah, you know, I've finished season two now, and, like, I just get more questions every episode. You know, it reminds me so much like lost in that way, where I'm just like, oh, okay, I've just forgotten about some of this other stuff because I now have new questions, but I don't have any answers. Like, it does remind me so much of Lost in those ways. Like, one of the shows like post Lost that reminds me of Lost the most, for sure. Just in that respect of just being like, yeah, there's just so much crazy shit going on, and I do enjoy majority of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's purely intentional. Like, even as someone who hasn't watched it, I can see the essence of it all over this. Obviously, there's cast members in it. There's a lot of people behind the scenes that we discussed before that make this. Even the title, you know, being this ambiguous four-letter singular word. Like, aside from calling this thing Found, I don't think they could have been more on the nose with the title to evoke Lost. And so, yeah, I'm very much excited to watch this. But yeah, this gets me, you know, very excited because, I am extremely fearful. Like, I'm not even saying that in jest. You know, I do get very worried for these random TV shows, and it's something that is, you kind of just, you know, watching Chucky, that's one of those things you have to just kind of throw to the wayside because we're such big fans of it, and just expect the worst at every case. And I fully expected it after last season. You know, a quality aside as well, like, I expected that after every season of Ash versus Evil Dead, and I'm so thankful that obviously Chucky is returning this year. And so, yeah, this is great that I'm, you know, I don't know much, you know, I don't know anything really about the story, and so, like, I don't know what they're thinking this is gonna be. You know, are they just gonna fully go Lost and be like, yeah, it's six seasons, or is this gonna be a smaller thing? Because I think this day and age, shows are more aware of not overstaying their welcome.
Yeah,
so they know to be like a four season thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think with From, you know, season two ended with like a pretty decent cliffhanger where I desperately need more of it, and it definitely kind of, you know, it's a lot like how Lost did things, where, you know, you suddenly think, man, they're expanding things, you know, and that's a worry when you're not greenlit for a season three. You know, it's what we always laughed and said with like Ash versus Evil Dead. We were like, well, we knew that was done. When we watched that finale and he's in the future, we're like, that's done. Like, they ain't got the budget for that. And, you know, and that's what we always laughed about. Like, I don't think we've ever spoke about it that much on the podcast, but like 4400 was a show where like, they came up with the gnarliest, like, biggest, like, it was basically, there was going to be a huge civil war, and the TV, like, you know, executives were like, we'd have probably given you a season five if you were just going to, like, chill at the compound again. But, like, we ain't got fucking civil war money. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? We can't blow up a city. They're like, no, you're cancelled, you know? And so when you do go large, you got to be... You know, that is ballsy. And so, yeah, I'm really happy that it has got renewed.
Yeah, like, again, it's hard to gauge with these things in general because I just don't think social media or even people talking about it's a good general sense with these things. You know, that's such a small echo chamber of people kind of parroting the same thing that it's very hard to gauge how successful shows are in this day and age. But you like to think that a show like this on a channel – which, yeah, MGM Plus, like, I don't know any TV show of noteworthy that they've ever produced. So the fact that this is something that is getting people talked about, and I saw that, like, Stephen King and stuff have talked about it, like, that's good signs that it's being talked about in good spaces. And so you'd like to think that even if it is, you know, like what a lot of channels and different distributors do, they might even take a loss on it and be like, well, this is putting us on the map for now, and then we'll have this going forward to invite more viewers in the future where we can actually make some money. So, yeah, this is great news all around, and yeah, I'm looking forward to finally starting it. But yeah, that is it for the news this week. Like I say, there is fuck all going on in the horror world. Yeah, there's like, apparently we're probably getting the Saw trailer in July. That was like almost in the news, and it's like, come on, that's not news. But that will be a fascinating one when we do get that, which I'm pretty sure will be in July.
I don't know if I can go through it with you again. I'm not gonna lie, like, you know, it's a lot it's a lot for you, but it's a lot for me just to like be there for it. Really, you know, the highs and the lows, you know. have to.
Yeah, it's just lows now, unfortunately.
Well, no, but it's the false highs and the lows. That's what it is.
I'm like, in my post-grieving Saw fandom at this point.
I mean, I hope so, but I don't know whether you can ever truly get there because it's the hope that kills. You know?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's killed me now because I don't think there's a trailer they could put that would get me. Yeah, me too.
Like,
I just don't see them releasing a trailer that's going to get me jazzed. I cannot see it, especially with how much I hate trailers now anyway, yeah. Coupled with the fact that, and most trailers are terrible, and I don't watch many anyway, whereas I will make an exception, obviously, for Saw because it's so noteworthy. But, like, I feel like it's just going to annoy me. It's just going to put me in even worse mood before seeing it, so...
Yeah, if Chris Rock isn't in the trailer, then I don't care.
Exactly. Yeah, that's just... Oh, what a nightmare that's going to be this October. Looking forward to it. Can't wait. I mean, that is probably one of the only big notable movies we've got for the rest of the year, so we better savour it. Because it's just a load of possession bullshit other than that. But, we're very excited for the future of horror this year. Shall we discuss?
Let's discuss this week's film.
It only took us 7 years, but we finally become what we hated. All of the pissed off, jaded horror fans in this world. Like, we finally got there.
We did it, guys. See you later.
Yeah, completed it. But yeah, let's talk about Malum. So yeah, as I just said that as the intro, I feel like that's absolutely the first time this has ever been spoken about on this podcast. Yeah. Not even in the intro. It was just like, let's just go straight into this and we'll figure out as we get along.
I mean, that's literally what I did this week. And, you know, I do sometimes, like, my first question is just like, where do they come from?
I know, that's what I love. And I always have like somewhat of a backstory, which is funny, because normally it's like, you know, there'll be ones that I'm vaguely aware of, or there'll be like a Candyland that was on my radar from Fright Fest, because there's a couple, like there's a movie called New Religion that's just come out that was at Fright Fest last year that I'm kind of interested in.
Yeah,
so that was another one that was on the potential,
like an easy, like, you know, they're on the radar.
Yeah, and it's funny because this does have a somewhat link to Fright Fest, which we'll get to, but it's not of that much relevancy regarding this film. But yeah, the reason why I heard about this movie is going back to our good and trusted, this didn't let us down last time, an article on bloodydisgusting.com, which, as a reminder, is the sort of world's biggest horror fan site, I guess, news site, review site, whatever you want to call it. And they posted an article 4 days ago, which was the 10 best horror movies released in the first half of 2023, which I immediately clicked on for multitude of reasons. Like, I was fascinated to see what they would cover, especially because of what we've been saying and how quiet it is.
Yeah.
You know, we've kind of both said, and like, I definitely feel like there's probably only three movies that I would like really highly recommend at this point. And I think it's bold doing a 10 best movies at the halfway point in any year. But like this year, especially, that's an incredibly bold thing to do, in my opinion. And I was expecting stuff that we've seen, like Outwaters and stuff, which wasn't on there, funny enough. But of the 10, five of them we had already covered. So obviously, you know, half of them were gone straight away. Another one was Beau Is Afraid, which obviously we haven't got to yet, but we hopefully will at some point. Another one was The Blackening, which is out at the end of August in the UK. So again, it's not available to us. Yeah, that looks funny. Mm. So that just left kind of three films. And one of them is a movie called Sisu, which looks like a more action-orientated film. Like, this did come out to cinemas over here, but it was kind of like a World War II R-rated kind of... It looks fun, but it just didn't really look that horror-y, but maybe we'll get to it. And then so that kind of left two other films, and both films I'd never heard of. So I was like, oh, okay, I'll just pick one of these at random, basically. And yeah, this was the one that we went with, Malum, which the slight Fright Fest reference is that this is a Apparently, this is a reboot slash reimagining of a 2014 film called Last Shift, and which is kind of done by the same guy. So the same guy who wrote and directed this did that film as well, which I'm assuming it was just like on a much smaller budget. But that movie premiered at London Fright Fest in 2014. Yeah, then he obviously, I'm guessing, like, I always wondered beforehand, I was like, okay, what does that mean? But I didn't want to look up too much, and then I have looked it up a little bit after the fact, because there's certain scenes in this that are kind of on a camera, like in the universe camera, like a, you know, camcorder, that are very sort of low budget looking, and I wondered if those were the ones that had kind of been pulled straight from it. And it was like, and that would make sense storyline wise if it was set in that period, which we'll get to. But it seems like it's not. It seems like it was this. It was about what, which we'll get to in the plot, about a, you know, a police officer on their own doing this quote unquote last shift, hence the name of the original film, in this sort of police station that's like being moved.
Last shift slash first shift, though. Like, very strange.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that's why they changed it slightly. Yeah. But obviously, yeah, we don't know anything about that film. We've not seen it or anything like that. But it's not relevant. It's one of those like, oh yeah, it's part of it, and I'm sure there are cool nods if you care about that thing, but this is very much its own standalone thing.
You say that, but I do find it fascinating, because I think, like, you know, I saw it after I'd seen the film, and I was like, oh, okay, was this like in a different language and then has been, you know, changed for that reason or something like that? But it's just like, it just seems like Last Shift was made on a incredibly small budget, but was incredibly well received. And so then, you know, this just seemed like it's pretty much just a remake with more money behind it. And like, I do find that fascinating, because, you know, that doesn't happen that often. You know, I think if a filmmaker does a great indie movie, then they try to, you know, make another movie with the bigger budget. But, you know, clearly he loved this idea so much that he just wanted to give it, you know, the budget that he's now got. And kind of, you know, I do find that fascinating to see this, like, you know, almost evolution of a movie idea in you know, his own mind. You know, making the, you know, effectively the same movie twice. I know it's a different name and everything else, and there are nuances to it, but you know, bare bones, it is the same story twice.
I think that's an interesting point. Like I say, you don't see it too often. It does happen occasionally. Where I have seen it, where it's like a guy has gone back and revisited their own work. And like I say, it wasn't a language barrier problem. It probably was just a budgetary reason, and being like, okay, now I've got, you know, more experience, I've made more movies, let's go back and revisit this thing. But it is, I do find it strange, because I'm like, you did that and you've kind of moved on in the last 9 years. I don't know why you wouldn't just do other stuff. And he's done loads of other stuff since then as well. So, like I say, it must have just been like a passion project for whatever reason. But yeah, what is this movie Malum about?
Basically, yeah, a rookie cop on her first, like, seemingly first shift as a police officer, asks to do kind of, the midnight shift on at this abandoned, soon to be abandoned police station. And kind of we know why from the opening of this movie, where basically there's this huge cult in town, and her dad, who was a police officer, was responsible for taking down the leader of the cult. What was his first name? It was like, is it John Malum?
Was it the dad?
You know, so hence the title of this movie. And he takes down the cult and rescues these three girls and is like this hero. And then a few days after the capturing of Malum, he then goes on a murder spree, the police officer dad goes on a murder spree in the police station, and then ends up putting his own shotgun in his mouth. And so kind of our lead kind of is it Jessica, I think? She is basically, it's weird really, like I was gonna say following her dad's footsteps, but it just feels like she wants answers. So she's decided to become a police officer. Her mum, who she is fairly estranged to, she doesn't call her mum, you know, she's very distant with her, hasn't given her answers. The police didn't give her answers. So it almost seems like she wants to kind of take this shift and be there in this police station where it all happened with her dad to try to get answers. And we learn in the opening of this movie that the whole town has kind of gone to shit. There seems to be the cult seems to be kind of causing chaos in town, and the police have moved to a different facility, and this kind of police station is kind of almost abandoned. It is just a hub that is being kept open temporarily. And so she's there on the midnight shift on her own. And yeah, I guess shit starts to go down. How much of it is real and how much of it is in her head is the big question really of the movie, I guess. Start to unpack it. I mean, I had to chuckle when I first started to synopsize it because it does make me laugh, like this whole first shift thing. Because did you get the impression that this was literally her first shift as a police officer?
It is weird, right? Because she's very much coming across like a rookie and like she's trying to learn things. So yeah, it was unclear.
Because she's at home, she's reading the police like how to be a police officer handbook. She's kind of going to see her dad's grave and being like, look at the uniform, how does it look? So it really felt like her first day. But then I'm like, you know, do they just issue a squad car and a weapon, like deliver it to your door before your first shift? You know, I've always...
Crazy coincidence as well. Yeah. Like, that if she's somehow just been able to become a police officer on the night that, you know, this entire police station's being shifted on, like... Where obviously this crazy thing happened with her dad, like it's just an insane coincidence. Yeah. So I don't know if it's necessarily her first shift or if she's just incredibly new to it all, like within the first month or two.
It always made me laugh with Resident Evil 2. You know that I was like, how did Leon get a car?
Yeah,
you know, like it's his first day on the job. Where did the car come from?
I don't know. You just get given the keys, don't you? Keys, badge, and a gun, right?
Well, yeah, when you get to the police station, you know, I thought you just turn up in your jeans and like, yeah, I'm here, I'm in time, like all uniforms that way, you know. Didn't expect you to like pull up in the car park with a fucking squad car.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I've never thought about it. I love your ability to think of these like minutia things I never even thought about, like with your whole fucking synthetic penis argument last week, which I'm just saying out of context. Don't even explain it, but I love that out of context. If you didn't listen to it last week,
I'm just saying the synthetic penis argument was a very crucial part of that episode.
Oh, it really is.
You know,
I guarantee you now that if I ever meet Charlie Brooker, there'll only be one thing in my head, and it shouldn't be that because there's a plethora of amazing things I should ask him about Nathan Barley or Black Mirror, but that'll be the question for sure.
Yeah, if we ever get him on the podcast, rest assured that question will be answered. Well, it'll be asked.
It'll hang up.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, but you know, totally worth it. I mean, going back to this movie, what did you think of Malum?
Yeah, it's such a weird one. Like, it's... We'll get into it overall, but it's sadly just like so many indie horrors that we cover that I feel like starts off with such promise and then slowly devolves into a lot of the same conventions that you see time and time again. Because I do think like the opening 5 minutes was kind of crazy how much shit happened.
Yeah.
You know, being kind of introduced to the cult and being introduced to what happened. And then like an insane jump scare, which like... is one of the best I've seen for so long when someone gets shot in the face out of nowhere.
Yeah, when he did that, like, I wasn't expecting it. You know, they're in mid-conversation about, like, a date. And then suddenly, yeah, just, like, boom. And, yeah, like, it definitely hits you in the face, the opening.
Yeah, it was awesome. Like, I really liked the way that panned out and stuff. And so then you're like, okay, then you introduce to the daughter, and it is very on the nose with a lot of this, like, you know, it's the anniversary and I'm stepping in their shoes and all that, and you know, visiting the grave, and you kind of see like the symbol of the cult on the back of the tombstone and all over the town and stuff. But I was like in it, like, and when she's kind of being introduced and there's like this really annoying asshole cop who kind of doesn't help her in the slightest, and so then she's like on her own, and it's kind of slowly cooking, and it's interesting because I'm I'm so I love cult shit so much. Like, it's such an easy win to get me involved in your film. I have such a low barrier and sort of low bar of quality when it comes to that stuff, where like, if you just show me like a relatively creepy looking dude who's just slowly quoting like Bible verses, like, I'm so in straight away. So when we see just some of that,
he was the most creepy, slightly creepy dude though ever. Like, oh, yeah, like, definitely. Like the lowest bar ever. Like, you know,
absolutely. This is one of the worst I've seen, and I was still like, oh yeah, this is all right.
Yeah, I mean, like, but if you like this, you're like any fucking cult.
Definitely. Like, and so I was like, okay, that's kind of cool, and I want to know more about why the cult is and stuff. Mm. And then you kind of just get her, and it just devolves quickly into her just sort of running around the police station, you know, very similar to something like The Boogeyman, where instead of, you know, kids in a house, it's just a woman in a police station, and she's kind of aimlessly going from room to room, and then there's some kind of poor attempts at jump scares. You know, it very quickly goes away from the very fun, interesting one that happened, you know, at left field early on, to just some really poor and generic ones. I'd say there's one other good one in the first 30 minutes, in the kind of cell that she gets locked in, which I thought was very cool. But then it just very, like, outside of the first 30 minutes, and then it does just devolve into, you know, running to this scene. Oh, there's some random screaming face and jump scare. And then it's like, she'll close her eyes and she'll open them, and now she's somewhere else in the police station. And it's just so disorientating, and it's so hard to figure out. Like, early on, it just felt like everything was in her head, and
yeah,
it's clearly not, because there's more stuff going on where, like, the town's gotten more crazy, they're targeting this police station because they've moved out of it, and there clearly is stuff going on. But at a certain point, I just stop caring, because I have no sense of telling what's real and what's fake anymore. Like, it's just impossible. Like, she's watching these old tapes of interviews of when they arrested, obviously, the cult, which is interesting. But then weird shit starts happening then, which is so, like, unexplainable in the world. You know, like, there's one where it's, like, it's showing her now, like, a shot of her watching the tapes. And then it's, like, you know, a vision of her getting up and smashing some evidence or whatever. And it's just, like, at that point, I can't trust anything that's on screen, so it's all nonsense. And a lot of people will love that shit, like, because it's just surrealist and there is really cool imagery and stuff. But what we've shown time and time again with this show is that it's just not my type of film. And again, what I opened with is kind of, it does just evolve into a lot of those conventions that you see with so many indie horror, where it has a premise, but then it doesn't have a story or characters after that, and it just uses a premise just to get across random scenes of horror. We saw so many movies, like That Girl on the Third Floor was identical to this, where it's like starts off and has like a character and some story, and then it just immediately goes to like running around a house and random shit happening, and people really like that one as well. And you know, we've seen at least two or three that would fit that bill at Fright Fest specifically as well, which again just aren't our cup of tea, or I speak for myself and say it's not my cup of tea. You know, I want to know what's going on. And like, when you're throwing in like she has this connection to the cult, and there's like the mom that's hidden stuff, like I want to be able to dig into the characters and dig into the story and figure shit out. But I think the movie's not designed that way. It doesn't want me to do that. Like, it almost doesn't care. It's like, that's the frivolous side stuff, but the main action is supposed to just be like, oh, isn't it crazy that there's now a hooded figure running towards her with a gun? But then when she screams and closes her eyes, it disappears. I'm like, I just don't find that interesting. Even if some of the gore and special effects are like really, really impressive, and really well done, it just lost me. And it's one of those movies that, again, it's 90 minutes, but it feels so much longer, because from the first 30, which I enjoyed, that last hour was just, it, to me, it was just the same routine over and over again of like, these are, it's a fun showreel, it's technically proficient, but my God, is this boring to me, because none of it has any impact or weight whatsoever. So yeah, it completely lost me after the opening act, really, and it never got me back. So I ended up just not having a good time with this one. And it's, like I say, it's a shame, because this just feels like, I feel like we've seen this movie so many times, this exact type of movie. And I really want to try and avoid films like this, because I just feel like I'm never going to see one of these that I love. so it's pointless me even watching them at this point. Where it's like, oh yeah, weird surrealist indie horror that's just gonna have a bunch of random shit. That's just not my thing. I know it isn't at this point, so I need to stop watching them. So yeah, this one wasn't for me, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think what you're saying, when it gets into this kind of realist, just kind of, you know, imagery and nonsense, and, you know, you don't know what's real and what's not, it becomes, I just instantly switch off and just can't care about anything because I don't know if anything's real. I was the same, like, the opening scene, I still found the opening scenes in the movie, as shocking as they were, a little bit disjointed. And that did have me worried because they are like really quick imagery and like all this chanting and weird stuff going on. And, you know, you see this like chair with the symbol and then you cut to something else. But I did, you know, when we actually got the scene with the police officer and like him, you know, shooting people and doing this massacre, I was like, shit, that was pretty intense. And then I really wanted to know why, you know, I really wanted to know the why behind it and kind of, you know, was he turned? Was he always a member? Was he brainwashed? You know, what had happened to make him do that? And, you know, there are little moments in the movie, even like later on, where they kind of say that the people who he killed didn't kill them. They hung themselves and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, hang on. Like, okay. But like you say, the movie just doesn't care enough to really give you those answers explicitly. It just wants to chuck a lot of shit at the wall and just let it be, you know, because I do think, as you said, you know, we don't like these sorts of movies, and I'm watching this one and I'm like, do you know what, if I don't like this one, I don't think I'll like any of them like this, because I did enjoy like the way this looked visually. There's some great effects in it, there's some great like monster effects, gore effects, you know, and you know, there was like towards the end, this like demon that was like that ended up chucking his face at her and stuff. And like that was like, you know, almost like Cenobite-ish. You know, there was a hanging scene that was incredibly brutal that looked really good. That like, you know, she had like her fingers in the rope and they were getting like severed as the rope got closer. Like that was pretty gnarly. But I just, like, as I'm watching it, I'm like, man, this looks insane. But I'm like, I don't understand what is going on. You know, I think the hanging one in particular, where I was like, I don't know who this girl is. I don't know why she's being hung like this. And I don't know why the rope is getting tighter. But, like, it looks insane. Do you know what I mean? Whereas, like, the opening scene, where it's like the police officer gets shot in the face. Like, oh, that looks insane. And I get what's going on. So yeah, I just don't think I can ever enjoy these sorts of movies where they just go so obtuse like that. And, you know, when the movie ends, I'm like, you know, was any of this real? You know, was her mum there at all? These three girls that were the victims that got that her dad saved, like, has the cult killed them? Has she killed them? Were they ever real? Like, did they die back then? Are they still alive? Like, you know, I don't really know. And I think like the movie wants to go, oh, well, you know, any of those, who knows, eh? And I'm like, nah, fuck that. I can't be doing with it. And, you know, I think that's what this movie is aiming for. And I think it executes that, but I think it is just me holding my hands up and say, I just can't do this. Cause yeah, I was bored for about an hour when this just started, as soon as she's in the police station and she starts just seeing shit, and I'm just like, oh, okay, it's going to be one of these ones. And it kind of gets more and more obtuse as the movie goes on. And like the whole time she's talking on a radio to the other police building. And I'm like, well, this is just clearly bollocks. Like, it's clearly bollocks. Like, she isn't talking to another police station. Like, I almost, like, wasn't sure whether the movie was going to end and this police building was condemned, like, really badly condemned, and she'd just been in there, like, going insane, thinking it was still active the whole time. Like, yeah, and I just, Yeah.
I feel like it needed something like that, actually, to kind of tie it all together.
Yeah.
Where, like, if it was just her going in, and it's like she looks, you know, really rough. She's more like her mum, where she has just been like an alcoholic that's gone crazy. And it's like, of course you didn't become a police officer and your first day on the job was the, you know, like all of these perfect things that would have made no sense.
They don't
like,
give out cars for the first shift. That would be the first warning.
About the biggest question that clearly everyone asks when they watch this film.
Exactly. That's the problem, you see. The movie starts and I'm like, how did you get this car? I'm like, well, it's clearly bollocks.
Immediately.
for the next hour and 25, I'm just like, well, this is all clearly bollocks. They don't give a police car out first day.
So how did you ever enjoy Resident Evil 2?
Well, they never asked the question to now, and now I think the game is shit.
Fair enough. But yeah, I'm completely with you. Like, this is a type of movie that I just wish I was into this stuff sometimes, so I could have like a.
I'm not entirely sure whether Leon steals that police car. You know, does he actually rock up in it in the opening, or does he? You know, I don't know whether he's actively in it. I think he just gets in one.
He's just a con man. He's just a con man, isn't he? Like, he doesn't know what the hell he's doing. Make it until
you make it. I mean, the thing is, right, if there's a global, like, pandemic of zombies, you know, why be who you are now? You know, it's way better to be like, no, I was a fucking police officer. Like, yeah, I need a gun, like, and a badge and some authority. Like, you know, you don't want to... That's what these shows have taught us over the years. You know, you got to reinvent yourself quickly, and that's what Leon did. He's a hustler.
Mm.
You know? But anyway, back to this movie. This is what it made me do, though. Like, it did make me just start to think about other things when I'm watching it, because I just... when you're showing me nonsense, I'm going to think about nonsense.
It's really hard to pay attention because there's nothing to kind of solidify your thoughts on. Of like, early on, I really wanted to know what was going on with the cult, what actually happened with her dad, you know, what's her mum hiding from and stuff. But just very quickly, the movie throws all that shit away in just favor of like, oh, it's all mental shit. And I know we just keep saying that beleaguering the same point now, but it is just like, I do in some ways wish I was into this, because then I could give a more nuanced opinion on whether it's a good one of these or not. Because to me, they're all so similar. And I can break down, you know, what you said perfectly about, like, this does have so many technically brilliant stuff in it. Definitely the effects and gore are above standard, I would say, here.
Yeah,
like, some of, you know, those... The ones that you called out in particular, I think, are all incredibly well done. And I think if you showed them out of context, they are so impressive. Mm. Where you're just like, oh yeah, just show the strangulation scene. It looks fucking crazy.
That's one of the craziest kills. Like, it's one where, like, you know, we do best kills of the year. This one will not be in my head because it just means nothing. But, like, visually, like, you know, it looked crazy when the fingers, like, got snapped and then the rope just, like, disappears in her neck. Like, it's really, really violent. And I don't even understand where the rope's coming from. Like, do you know what I mean? I don't even know who this person is or why she's, you know, what's going on.
No, because it's just all kind of make-believe silliness.
Well,
because
she's one of the three girls, isn't she?
I think so, because that was the one part when it slowly got me again with the story, which again, it was so frustrating because it was told to us via the phone.
Yeah, which was when
I was totally with you of like, the second she started having these phone calls, I was like, well, these phone calls are bullshit. Like, she's not having communication with the outside world and these other police officers because they're her only connection to sanity. So I already knew that was bollocks. So when they said like, oh, yeah, the three people that were saved that night, they've all been reported missing tonight. For a second, I was like, oh, that's cool. If they are trying to, like, make good on what Malum's promise was, and they've now re-kidnapped them all, and they're maybe going to do some sort of anniversary killing at the police station, like the rest of the followers that didn't get arrested or whatever.
Yeah.
But then, like, that was told to us in such a way that I didn't trust, that, again, I didn't know if any of this was real or not. So I couldn't get invested in that, because that would have been a cool finale for this film that they'd set up, if it had been, like... Let's say she's like actually not seeing as much crazy shit, and that was her mission, that she was having to now basically do what her father done and step in, and but obviously not go crazy this time. Like, that would have been interesting.
Yeah, Nicole had kidnapped these three girls. They'd gone to the police station, and they were trying to kill them, and she was trying to stop them, and it was a cat and mouse and kind of, you know, backwards and forwards that way and everything else. And that's what this movie kind of is, but then they'll just be like a monster jump out, and then she wakes up and she's in a different room. You know, the whole thing with the you know, you mentioned kind of half an hour in when she gets kind of stuck in the prison cell. Like, that whole bit is just bollocks, because I'm just like, she gets shut in, the door's locked, she sees all this weird shit, then the door's just magically open. She kind of falls through
that,
the door.
That really annoyed me.
Then she just appears in another place. And I'm like, is the homeless guy even in the cell anymore? Mm. Like, you know, what is going on? And yeah, and that's where I felt with just so much of this, where I'm like, you know, was he there ever? Was the mum there ever? Was, you know, the three girls there ever? Like, did she take the three girls and her mum there and kill them? And we just saw her being insane, you know? And I think, like, and I know we keep harping on about it, but I think if you're into these type of movies, they're the things where you're like, yeah, exactly, what was it? Yeah, cool. And I'm like, yeah, I just fucking hate that, you know? So, and that's why I think it executes what it wants to do. And I think if you're into this stuff, you could be like, oh, okay, yeah, it's just so ambiguous. And like, yeah, I think, you know, and you come up with these different scenarios for it. But I'm like, no, I just, like, and I just think that's the way I've gotten as well. Like, the older I get, the more I don't like to sit and, like, I know we do it often on the show, but I don't like always sit there and like want to just come up with theories and everything else. Often when I sit and watch them, I've realized that way more when I've watched the recent Scream movies, where I'm like, we'll talk shit about them beforehand and try to come up with theories. But when the movie's on, my brain is just like, I just want to be strapped in and go along for the ride. And I don't, and it doesn't wander often. And I just want to be entertained, you know, and I just, I don't want to be asked these questions and stuff. I think that's why I don't gravitate towards these at all.
Yeah, I think it's purely just a taste thing. Because, like say, for us, a movie like Sick earlier this year was perfect because it wasn't trying to do anything crazy or, you know, have all this, like, weird, surrealist shit. It was purely just a cat-and-mouse slasher game, which we're so into. And so you can enjoy it. You watch it. You know all the stuff that's happening is actually happening. And that's all it is. Whereas, yeah, I think a movie like this will work for so many people and has clearly a vast audience, and it's just not us in the slightest. Mm. And it's a shame because I want to be able to look at everything. And I feel like even with the possession stuff, you know, which for a genre that we have lambasted for so long, I do feel like I can at least see the good in that. And I have, you know, I have examples of stuff I can point to that I've enjoyed within that subgenre. Whereas I feel like whatever this is, I can't think of anything that I've liked. And it's the only thing that's even close, which is so funny, because I said this before with these movies, is that I feel like a bunch of filmmakers grew up watching The Shining, and they took all of the things, in my opinion, the wrong things from that movie, and kind of made their own takes on it. And we're seeing that now, where it's like, I love The Shining, but I don't think I've loved a single movie that would probably point to The Shining as the inspiration for their said film. Which, yeah, is bizarre. But yeah, as far as recommendations go,
I was just going to say, though, I think, like, it is fascinating, because I do think, like, a movie like The Shining has stuff that are clearly in people's heads, and then you have, like, you know, the shit that's actually happening that's real as well, you know, and you kind of know where those two worlds are, and they do dilute a bit, but like a movie like this, it just goes off a cliff instantly for me, where I'm like, no, everything's now bollocks, I don't know. And I think it is just that time jump where you're just like, you have so much time where shit's going down that it's clearly not real, and then you flick back and they're just somewhere else altogether, and you just have no clue then of what is real anymore.
I completely agree with that, and that would be probably why I love The Shining, but I totally see where
the inspiration. All these people are coming from. I see the inspiration, because it's just...
Because,
you know...
the thing is, with modern day films, everything's pushed to the nth degree. So like subtlety doesn't exist anymore. So everyone's like, oh yeah, remember that bit where he walks down and he sees those guys with the furry masks on? It's like, let's just make a 90-minute film of that. Yeah. And we've seen that multiple times. And it's like, yeah, that was fun for 10 seconds in The Shining. And so I think that's where it definitely comes from, is just, you know, not having restraint and all of these other things that is missing for sure. But for me, I can't possibly recommend this for my own taste, because even though it had obviously an interesting setup, for me, the last hour was pretty boring, and like I say, has so much merit from a technical aspect, from a film enjoyment standpoint, there was nothing for me. I definitely wouldn't recommend this one, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm the same. You know, I think it is just... I didn't enjoy this. I was pretty bored throughout. And yeah, as much as I have to tip my hat to you know, the good that they did, I have to just realize how in the moment, like, I got to a point where I kept pausing the movie to see how long I had left, and the time didn't change like 3 times. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I think I'm just going to be stuck with 13 minutes left in this movie. Like
forever.
Yeah, I couldn't get it any lower. Like, I kept watching it, and the time wasn't going down. And yeah, you know, the old time police might be like, oh, here they go again. But it is, you know, it is when you watch something and you just like, you need to get it done and you want to just finish it because you're not enjoying it. And yeah, it just took forever. So yeah, I don't recommend it either, unfortunately.
Yeah, sadly, I missed that one. But yeah, that was our discussion of Malum. We'll take a quick break and we will be right back. So yeah, I did have something else to discuss this week, which is much more exciting. Something that I've been meaning to talk about for a while now. Didn't have the time until now. But yeah, I'd mentioned it before in passing on the podcast that I was reading a certain novel, which of course was The Scarlet Gospels by Clive Barker, which I've now finished. And yeah, for people that don't know anything about this is obviously Clive Barker, the esteemed British author who obviously wrote The Hellbound Heart, which he then adapted into the amazing Hellraiser.
Very exactly, you know, very important point for a lot of people out there that try to make out like, you know, he didn't make the movie.
Yeah, and it's just, it's preposterous. But yeah, and then obviously spawned the franchise, which was all sort of brand new material after that point. And the actual franchise itself has obviously existed in comic books, and he's kind of flirted with it in that realm. But then, he kind of finally made his grand return in 2015, which was so recent.
I remember that long ago, man. Like, I can't believe that book's been out 8 years.
Yeah, well, that's what's crazy now, but I remember at the time, like, hearing about it and being like, oh my god, after all these years, obviously, and Hellbound Heart being, like, such a small, obviously, it's a novella from 86, and it was such a small book, whereas this is, like, a fully-fledged, like, nearly 400-page novel that is kind of, it fills in a lot of the gaps, and it is a sequel, you know, a direct sequel to that book, and it brings in Harry D'Amore, who's kind of, I think, from his Books of Blood series as well, this kind of detective, because he's in a lot of his different other books and comic books and stuff. But yeah, this for me was like a dream because, you know, I love Hellraiser so much and I've always wanted more good shit in Hellraiser, and I had to go to a other avenue that, as we've discussed time and time again, isn't one of my favorite avenues, let alone for entertainment or storytelling. But I'm so thankful that I did, because I think this is a story that obviously as of right now only exists in this form. I don't think it will ever exist in any other form. And I think even if it did, it'll be so unbelievably compromised, because I can't think of it, whether it's film or television or anything else you can think of. I just don't think this story will work in any other form. I think it's ridiculously ambitious for what it is. You know, it's most of it's set in hell, but it's also set with these insane landscapes and creatures and desolate wastelands and all of this crazy macabre stuff, that if something that requires an insane, you know, you're talking like upwards of a $50 million budget, you then have to make it marketable to the masses. And this is a, you know, Hellraiser story. It's filled with the grotesque, and it's filled with people doing awful things to each other in almost every scene. So you wouldn't be able to put this on any sort of major label. You know, you could not have this on Netflix, like, no chance. And so it's fascinating to have finally have read this whole thing, because I absolutely loved it. I thought it was exceptional from start to finish. I think Clive Barker as an author, the way he describes stuff, I think, is second to none. That's, like, for me, his biggest thing that stands out across only reading just these two books is his descriptive terms and, like, setting a scene.
Well that's what I was going to really say. Unparalleled. Also, just the way for describing the macabre. You know, throughout this book, there are so many violent scenes and so much violent imagery, and the way he describes it, because, you know, I've spoke about it on the podcast before, that, you know, with a book, for me, quite often I'm reading a book and it's just blank faces. You know, I just don't, like, picture this vivid image in my mind. And so often I like to read stuff that is stuff I've seen, so then I'm like, oh, okay, cool, I know what Harry Potter looks like now, sweet, let's read the book, you know. And that's just how I work. Like, I just don't necessarily, like, that's why I don't read a ton of books. But when I read this, I was like, man, like, the image in my mind is vivid, what it is, and like, the way he describes hell and the way he describes some of the buildings and all of that, like, they're seared into my brain, like I have seen it on screen, which is very unique.
Yeah, it's awesome for that reason. Like, and I'm so glad to kind of see, you know, the return of the Hell Priest and seeing this fully fleshed out version of this character that was obviously so literally used in the first novella, and for kind of them to be the star of the show. And like, people should definitely check out just the opening of this book if you're not even going to read the whole thing, because I think it perfectly encapsulates, like what you just said, describing these grotesque acts and really fleshing out this world and the lived-in feeling of just every room and the architecture and all that stuff. It's crazy. I loved it. I would say it's probably, like, my second favorite book I've read after Nosferatu by Joe Hill, because that was so impressive to me. But I'm so glad, like I say, I read this, because I really don't think that it will be anywhere else and it'll be done justice. And that's definitely something that I want to continue. Like, I'm going to continue to read. It'll probably be at a very slow pace, like I did this one, because, like I say, it's just very much down my list of priorities. But I was looking at kind of stuff to next go to, and it was like, oh, should I do Stephen King? But there's probably just too much there. Yeah, well, that was the thing. Like, my biggest takeaway after this is I have probably read like a dozen books in the last few years, but it's always been either nonfiction or it's stories I already know. And whilst that is fun to see different forms, I'd much rather have something like this. Turning page to page and not knowing what's going to happen is obviously the most exciting thing you can have. So, like, for example, my biggest kind of crux to this argument is I really want to try and read Lord of the Rings. That, to me, that's like a bucket list thing, that I want to at least attempt to read Lord of the Rings because of how much I love it. But again, it's like, I know that story. Yeah. You know, it's going to be different, of course, from seeing the films, but, like, I know, you know, Hobbits and Middle Earth. So, like, I would much rather read something completely fresh. And that's why Nosferatu was so exciting. Ooh. And yeah, you already mentioned it, but, like, Stephen King, for that reason, was kind of out, because I think all of his major stories have been adapted. And so it's like, yeah, you're always going to get Stephen King adaptations. So then it was like, okay, do I go to another Clive Barker, or do I go back to Joe Hill? And obviously he's only done four novels, Joe Hill. Two of them I've read, and then one of them is Horns, the film, which obviously I saw the film of. And then the other one is The Fireman, which was his kind of like post-apocalyptic big epic. And that was the last one, like, many, many years ago. Yeah, so I think that will be my next sort of major one. But the one I have already picked up, which I will get to because it's so little, is this is like a short story that was released prior to the Scarlet Gospels, called Hellraiser the Toll. And it's based upon a story by Clive Barker, but he didn't actually write this. Wow. It was written by like his long-term editor, I think, called Mark Allen Miller. And it's only like 60 pages. So it's a very small story that ties the two books together. I know it features Kirsty, obviously from The Hellbound Heart, and it's basically the precursor to where the Hell Priest gets at the start of the Scarlet Gospels.
That's cool.
Yeah, because I wanted to check it out and kind of complete it. Because, yeah, that I was so ready for more. Like, Scarlet Gospels was amazing. And I was like, oh, I want more of this. And obviously the case is it doesn't exist. Like, this is the only one true novel to feature these characters. And like I say, there are comic books that he's been involved in. But they are a different canon. Because, like, each one has different things of, like, oh, Hezith the Hell Priest, you know, won and conquered Earth and all these different scenarios. Yeah. Whereas I love that this was, like, the one true canon that had these three books. So... I'm done, definitely gonna read like, that.
That's the thing, it's so well done.
So complete.
You know, that's the thing, it's such a complete story of it. You know, it really is the true Pinhead story that we've always wanted.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like there will never be anything else after this. And I think if he did go back on this, it would be a detriment to this amazing novel. Because the Scarlet Gospels is the one true sequel. He's like, fine, I'll finally do it. And I think he did it for the fans, which is so exceptional as well. Cool. But like Clive Barker has so many other books as well that I would love to read. Obviously there's like the one that he adapted into Nightbreed and stuff like that, but the Cabal. But again, it's like a story that I'm more familiar with. But he has plenty of books, you know, original books that I would like to check out. But yeah, I think it would either be one of those or it probably would just be the Joe Hill one, because like seeing as I've read all the other ones, it would make sense to do like the one fully original story of his that I'm not familiar with. And because I've just loved everything Joe Hill that I've read as well.
It's fantastic. Yeah. The Fireman is really, really fantastic. Like I think you know, I have zero doubts that you'll love it.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's got another short story collection as well, so I could get to that at some point. But I would definitely rather have, like, say, a meaty novel, because Nosferatu was amazing. I read his first one, Heart-Shaped Box, which I remember enjoying at the time, but I'm very much struggling to remember almost anything that happened in it at this point. It's so funny how this whole fascination started. It started with Horns. Like, I saw the movie Horns, and I loved it so much that I wanted to read the book. And I went to the library, and they didn't have Horns, but they had Nosferatu.
Yeah,
and that was where it all began. Yeah, then I read my favorite book of all time, just because they happened to have it there, which is crazy. But, highly recommend this. Obviously, if people are into the books, I'm sure you'd have already checked this one out. And if you haven't, for whatever reason, and you even remotely like this would be the one that I'd want to speak solely to Hellraiser fans as well. Like, if you're like me, the long broken Hellraiser fan, like, you owe it to yourself, because to me it goes, you know, things that contain Pinhead, it's like the original Hellraiser movie, then it's reading this book. Like, those are the best two experiences you can have with these characters. And then you watch Hellraiser 2, and then you probably stop. Because those are probably the only three things you need to do. You don't even need to read Hellbound Heart. Like, I'm glad I did, but it's, you know, it's that first movie. Like, they adapted it perfectly. So, yeah, that would be my recommendation for sure. But, yeah, it was a great time. And it's nice to do something a bit different, even though it's been quite on the movie front. So it was nice to get to it. And it's been an insane year for video games as well. But always nice to check out the books. Like,
sometimes you got to do things a bit different, you know.
Yeah, I like mixing it up every now and again. That's why I don't want to dive straight into another novel, because this was one that I've been reading for about a year. So I read things very slowly because I just don't, you know, prioritize it like I do other forms of entertainment. But this Hellraiser short story that I have, like I say, I'll be able to finish this in like a couple of journeys. I'll definitely pick up one of the main ones in the future. That is pretty much it for another week. We've actually got some films to talk about coming soon, which is always nice for a film podcast. It is nice, isn't it? So yeah, we're back in the cinema soon.
Anyone gonna address the elephant in the room?
What's that?
The movies we've got to go
what
see.
The film is? No.
Well, I'm pretty excited to be back in the cinema watching a horror movie then, and if that's the case.
Exactly. Like, let's just focus on the positive.
Love horror movies in the cinema.
Me too. Always great time. And then we're back on Netflix because there's that Bird Box spin-off is out the week after that, which I'm like excited for that.
That's the thing that is coming out.
Yeah. I know there's a trailer out, but I just have zero interest because I know we're going to be watching it. But yeah, I'm excited for that. It's such a weird thing, this like Spanish spin-off of Bird Box all these years later. So I'm curious what the hell that is. Mm. Like, I want Netflix to come back with some more stuff like that, you know, some weird, interesting stuff. So yeah, films on the horizon to talk about, which is good stuff. But yeah, that was episode 354. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll see you again very soon.
See you later, everyone. Shut up, I can't. Mainly because I never could. And how could I start that?